So here we are at session 5, talking about help, hope, and freedom, talking about grace and mercy. Boy, don't we need that. One of the things my son and I did is we put out a DVD series called The Mousetrap, Dangers of Internet Pornography. It's 9 hours long. We talked to 14 addicts or their wives and 14 therapists. We drove 6,000 miles and spent $70,000. Not one penny of which went in my pocket. It's what it costs to put this series out. 18 lessons. You own it. The church owns it. All right, it comes with a seminar. So as follow-up, I'll give some suggestions as we go. I do want to say, quoting my son, the creator of the universe is not intimidated by the creators of the internet. Sometimes we think we're in a losing battle. We're not in a losing battle, as long as God's on our side. Okay, I want to show that first little video. It's going to take a second to queue up.
Dr. Switzer?
Yes, come in. I'm just washing my hands.
I'm Catherine Bigman. Janet Carlisle referred me.
Oh, yes. Still being buried alive in a box.
Yes, that's me. Should I lay down?
Oh, no, we don't do that anymore. Just have a seat. And let me tell you a bit about our billing. I charge $5 for the first 5 minutes. And then absolutely nothing after that. How does that sound?
That sounds great. Too good to be true, as a matter of fact.
Well, I can almost guarantee you that our session won't last the full 5 minutes. Now, we don't do any insurance billing, so you would either have to pay in cash or by check.
Wow. Okay.
And I don't make change.
All right.
And go.
Go.
Well, tell me about the problem that you wish to address.
Oh, okay. Well, I have this fear of being buried alive in a box. I start thinking about being buried alive, and I begin to panic.
Has anyone ever tried to bury you alive in a box?
No, but truly thinking about it does make my life horrible. I mean, I can't go through tunnels or be in an elevator or in a house, anything boxy.
So what you're saying is you're claustrophobic.
Yes, that's it.
All right, well, let's go, Catherine. I'm going to say two words to you right now. I want you to listen to them very, very carefully. Then I want you to take them out of the office with you and incorporate them into your life.
Well, shall I write them down?
Well, if it makes you comfortable, it's just two words. We find most people can remember them.
Okay.
You ready?
Yes.
Okay, here they are.
Stop it!
It?
Yes, S-T-O-P, new word, I-T.
So, what are you saying?
You know, it's funny. I say two simple words, and I cannot tell you the amount of people who say exactly the same thing you're saying. I mean, this is not Yiddish, Catherine. This is English. Stop it.
So, I should just stop it.
There you go. I mean, you don't want to go through life being scared of being buried alive in a box, do you? I mean, that sounds frightening.
Yeah. Then stop it!
I can't. I mean, it's been with me since childhood.
No. We don't go there. Just stop.
So I should just stop being afraid of being buried alive in a box.
You got it. Good go. Well, it's only been
It's only been 3 minutes, so that will be $3.
I only have a five, so.
Well, I don't make change.
Then I guess I'll take the full 5 minutes.
Fine.
All right. Well, what other problems would you like to address?
I'm bulimic. I stick my fingers down my throat.
Stop it! Not of some kind? Don't do that.
But I'm compelled to. My mom used to call me
fatty. No.
No, we don't go there.
But I've been having these dreams.
No, we don't go there either.
But my horoscope did say...
We definitely don't go there.
Just stop it.
What else?
Well, I have self-destructive relationships with men.
Stop it!
You want to be with a man, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, yes.
Well, then stop it. Don't be such a big baby.
I wash my hands a lot.
That's all right. I wash my hands all the time. And there's a lot of germs out there. Uh-huh. Yeah, don't worry about that one.
I'm afraid to drive.
Well, stop it! How are you going to get around? Get in the car and drive, you kook!
You stop it!
What's the problem, Kathy?
I don't like this therapy at all. You're just telling me to stop it.
And you don't like that?
No, I don't.
So you think we're moving too fast, is that it?
Yes. Yes, I do.
All right, then let me give you 10 words that I think will clear everything up for you. You want to get a pad and a pencil for this one?
Right.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right, here are the 10 words.
Stop it or I'll bury you alive in a box.
Send it back to my laughing.
I thought it was time for a little levity. But let me tell you, I hear that all the time. Someone's an alcoholic, they say, just stop it. I dealt with a girl at Harding who was bulimic, anorexic, had started growing thin hair on her arms. And the doctor told us that was an indication that in 30 days she'd be dead if she didn't get help. And when she came to my office for help, my first inclination was to say, well, just stop it. Stop throwing up. Stop gorging yourself. Stop doing all that. You can't cure an addiction by just telling somebody to stop it. Do they need to stop? Of course they need to stop. But we use this all the time. Renee and I laugh constantly because somebody calls and they have some bizarre thing that they want us to deal with, and we deal with them. And then when we hang up, we go, well, just stop it. You just need to stop doing that. And we just laugh because we think that's so hilarious. Well, people do need to stop it. At least you old hats will know where this is from. Making your way in the world today takes everything you've got. Taking a break from all your worries sure would help a lot. Wouldn't you like to get away? Sometimes you want to go where everyone knows your name. Already a clue, isn't it? They're all glad you came. You want to be where you can see our troubles are all the same. You want to be where everybody knows your name. You want to go where people know people are all the same. You want to go where everybody knows your name. Where did that come from? Cheers! It is heartbreaking and heart-wrenching that people go to the bar to get help because people at the bar know their name and seem to care about them, and they come to church and we found out they're addicted to sex or addicted to alcohol or something else, and we won't even learn their name. I promised I wouldn't go here. I promised myself, but I'm going to go here briefly. Same thing with same-sex attraction. We have all kinds of people in the church that are same-sex attracted who are living celibate because they're trying to do it the way God says. And the church finds out about it and they are ostracized. Don't get me started on that. But let me tell you, we have to become a church where people know they're safe, and we need to become a church where people understand we love them. If you go out on the streets of Springfield and say, what do you know about the Sunset Church of Christ? And the first thing they tell you is they don't believe in instrumental music. I've got to tell you, we're not doing it right. We got to get to the place where we don't agree with those people, but they'll love you and serve you and help you any way they can. Got to change the opinion. I want to tell you a story of a young man. Lived in Searcy, I won't tell you which church. Young man, had kids, was sexually addicted. He went to an all-men's class Sunday morning, and it was announced the Sunday before that next Sunday, we're going to write down on 3x5 cards something you need help with. And then we're going to go around the room, 35 men, we're going to go around the room and see who can help you with whatever you need. So that Sunday came, this young man went to class. Says he went to class and everybody was writing stuff down and he wrote, I'm addicted to pornography. And he handed it in and then he got buyer's remorse. He's like, I've never admitted that to anybody. What are they going to say? What are they going to do? So the teacher got the cards, read the first one. Well, here's Joe, and he needs somebody to help him paint his bedroom. Somebody said, oh, I can help Joe. Someone else needed the lawn mowed. They'd broken their foot and couldn't mow the lawn. Here's somebody help that. Somebody else needed something else. They went on and on through 34 cards. And each card, this young man was thinking, oh, the next one's mine. Everybody's been superficial, but I really need help with this pornographic addiction. And ever, you can imagine the terror actually inside him, admitting this publicly for the first time. They got down through 34 cards, and the teacher said, well, that's it. Y'all have a good week. And this kid was devastated. And he thought, I wonder what happened to my card. As he's walking out, he looked in the wastebasket and the teacher had crumpled up his card and thrown it away. He changed churches. I would have to. You know who it was? My son. Whew, it's hard to talk about it. Renee said, I made my dad cry. Sandy said, oh, he cries all the time now. It's okay. It's not a man thing. It's just the way it is. Can you imagine someone coming before 35 men saying, I have this problem. I really need help with this. It's way past mowing my lawn and painting my ceiling. I need help with me. And the teacher threw them in the trash. We got to quit throwing people in the trash. We got to quit ignoring problems that are right in front of our face. We don't ignore it because we're bad people. We ignore it because we're in the eye and we don't even see it. Devastating. Devastating. People who come to us who are addicted have no faith a lot of times. They have to borrow our faith until they have their own. We just have to have enough faith to drag them along. Told you a while ago, addiction's not about substance or activity. It's about the lack of authentic relationship. It's about the lack of intimacy. It's about medication. It's about filling the holes in the heart. And addicts are going to fill those holes with whatever gives them the greatest dopamine rush, whatever that happens to be. Here's the sex addict's core beliefs. I'm basically a bad, unworthy person. No one would love me if they really knew me. My needs are never going to be met if I have to depend on others. Sex is my most important need. If I don't act out, I'll die. When I was teaching at the university, occasionally I teach a speech class. And we had one class on self-perception and self-worth. And I always made the point that the reason people won't open up is if I open up to you after everything you've heard me say this day, you don't even know me, most of you, but if I really opened up and said, I really struggle with this problem, and you ignore me or you throw it away, then you have rejected me. You have rejected me to my core. I don't care if you reject the way I paint your wall and you don't appreciate it. That's superficial. But if I tell you what I need and you laugh me off, you have laughed off who I am. And I'm not going to tell anybody what my problems are if you're not safe. And if I know you won't blab it all over the country. And if I know you won't get help. I was at a church several years back, 1,500 people in the audience. Guy answered the invitation down the front row and said, I have committed adultery and I need help. So he was prayed for. After it was all over, the prayer was said, there were 5 or 6 people that came down to hug his neck. But you should have heard the whispering. What do you think they were whispering? Wonder who the woman was. Wonder if she goes to church here. He's a Bible teacher. I wonder if it's one of his kids in his class. The whole church was buzzing with who else is out there. Who is it? Who else is sinning? The overwhelming majority didn't even come to the front and say, that takes so much guts to come up and say. If I attended that church, I would never confess anything to anybody about anything. Would you? I don't know much about this church, but I know it's got to be a safe place. If it's not a safe place to let you see my warts and all and have you love me and help me and spend money on me if you need to, whatever it takes to get me help. If you're not willing to do that, then I'm going someplace else. And if there's not a Church of Christ in the area that will help me, I'll go someplace else. That's against every core belief I have. But if we're not going to help, they're going to go find help somewhere. Have to be a safe place. Welcome, you're entering a safe place. Can you put that outside on your door? I hope so. I don't know. Honestly, don't know. You're entering a safe place. An addict thinks if you and I won't love them, then certainly God doesn't love them either. Because we're God's representation. Where does it all start? It starts at home. About 2/3 of parents have trouble explaining sexuality to their kids. Therefore, they don't. They learn it out behind the barn or at a bunking party or a sleepover. They learn about it somewhere. So like I told you this morning when I was going to talk to my son when he was 10. Said, we need to have the talk. He said, you know, about sex, Dad? Yeah, well, what do you want to know? He knew it all. One of the things I've produced in my Center for Christian Broadcasting side of the business is we've produced 2 DVD series called Coming of Age, one for boys, one for girls. It takes you from basic anatomy, and we don't call it names that aren't true. We take it up through STDs. We take it through the whole thing. Each one's about 3 hours long. You own it with this seminar. You ought to get them. Take them home. Show it to your children. Show it to your children with you sitting there so you can answer questions. Unbelievably, perhaps dads have more influence on their daughters than moms. Especially when it comes to sexuality, but less than 10% of dads talk with their daughters about sexuality. I've already shown you I'm vulnerable. I didn't talk to my girls. I got two girls. I didn't talk to them. I let mom handle it. I was going to have the sex talk, which implies one, which is foolish. I was going to have that with my son. He was way ahead of me. This is a huge challenge for women who are single mothers, single parents. If the dad has more influence on them sexually and in sexual training than anything else, what are they going to do? They have to have the church be their family. And there has to be godly men, two at a time, not one, two at a time, that take the girls and talk to them and model what it's like to be a Christian man. One of the things we did right at the little church I preached at is every year or two, we tried to do it more often, but we would take all the girls that were below 12 who weren't living with their father, and we'd have a date night. And we were in Newport. It was 90 miles from Little Rock. We said, we're taking you to Little Rock. You wear your best dress. We're going to wear our suit and tie. And two of us, dressed up in the best clothes we had, picked them up, gave them their first corsage. Their mamas cried when we picked them up. And we took them to Little Rock. We said, where do you want to go? Girls, they said, the steakhouse. We went to the most expensive steakhouse in Little Rock. And I don't know what it cost. It cost several hundred dollars. But those little girls had the best time in their life. And they found out they could have fun with Christian, godly men who tried to model what their fathers should be. For single mothers, you men need to get on track. You may already be, but you need to model godly fatherhood. Don't be naive. Don't go by yourself. Two men always. Two men always. Okay, let's show the cheerleading dad. This is a whopping 35 seconds. Shows you what I think a dad ought to do.
Oh, those boys are much too much. Those boys are much too much.
We got the spirit. We're hot. We can't be stopped. We got the spirit. We're hot. We can't be stopped. We're going to beat them and bust them. Beat them.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life.
Let's get a little bit rowdy. R-O-W-D-Y.
Take time to be a dad today.
All those boys are much too much. Those boys.
Isn't that great? I love that. My wife says, I love that too much. I love that. It's what a dad ought to do. Get out there for your little girl. Show her you love her. Show her what dads really are like if they're godly and they're concerned. I said it this morning. I'm going to say it again. Too many times I hear people say, well, I have a lot of quality time with my kids. Well, how many hours did you spend with them last week? Well, I'm on the road a lot. You know, I drive truck. And I can't ever get home, so I had an hour with them. But it was quality. Hogwash. It wasn't quality. You don't have quality time on demand. You have quality time those 2-3 minutes in the midst of 10 or 12 hours you're with them. And they go, Dad, I've got a little problem. Can you help me? And you go, yeah. And they tell the problem. You give them as best answer you can. And you get off of it. And you go back to whatever you're talking about. That's quality time. We need to have quality parents, quality dads. What every son and every daughter needs from his or her dad, they need attention, affection, and affirmation. You say, I thought you were going to tell me how to deal with addiction. I'm telling you right now. Kids need attention, affection, and affirmation. From a dad, a son needs to hear, I love you. I never heard that from my dad my entire life. Not one time. I'm really proud of you. Son, you are so good at. I've got a grandson. He's 20 years old. He played 1 year of football. Didn't like it. His older brother was a star. If he hadn't broken his stupid foot, he'd have been state. All state. But Luke didn't like football, didn't care about football, but he loved the band. We said, Luke, we are so proud of you. And we were, because you played in the band. You know, the school we went to, if you were in the band, you were a geek. Everybody made fun of you. That's not the way it ought to be. Our youngest grandson from Renee plays the flute. What a sissy instrument. The flute. I played the trumpet. But let me tell you, he's good at it, and he goes to the games, and he plays, and he's doing very well with that. Son, I'm so proud of you because you're in the band. Now, what about a daughter? You're going to argue with me? I'm up to it, okay? You mean more to me than anything. Listen to me. Even my job, if my job interferes with your happiness and prospect of going to heaven, I'll quit and get another job. Don't tell me I'm going to have to quit my job. Do you want your kids to go to heaven or not? Did you see the caveat? Is it going to get in the way of them going to heaven? Chris, Renee's ex, is an overseas pilot, was gone half of their kids' life. It didn't do them any good. I have friends who are truck drivers. Nothing wrong with driving a truck. A lot of times I thought about quit teaching these snotty-nosed kids at Harding and go drive a truck. And there, you know they're snotty-nosed because you send them there. You expect Harding to make them non-snotty-nosed kids in one semester. We can't do it. But if you're a long-haul trucker and you're always gone from your kids, I feel very sorry for you, but you need to get another job. I don't care what kind of a job it is. If you're away from your kids substantial periods of time, somebody else is going to raise them. And you're going to have little influence. Your daughter needs to hear, I love you. And they need to hear, you're just as beautiful as your mama. They need that. We've already talked about you can't pray your addiction away. Sandy hates this. I didn't lie to her. I just didn't tell her I was going to include it. When she was in a wreck 12, 13 years ago, that's her in ICU. She was in a coma for over 30 days. Five doctors told us she was going to die. The whole church prayed for us. God finally helped her come out of a coma. But counting the operation she had in the hospital, coming now 12 years later, she's had about 14 surgeries. Did we pray? Yeah. Did God answer our prayer? She's sitting right there. Is she hurting? Yeah. Right now? Yeah. She is. Am I trying to get you to feel sorry for her? No, not at all. What I'm trying to say is, prayer is wonderful and we need to have it. But with addiction, God generally doesn't act immediately. That's my experience. Spiritual intervention happens, sins are forgiven, but addiction triggers will always be there. Physical, neurological, and relational healing takes years. It takes years. With an addiction, there's a line when crossed. you lose the ability to say no. They call it the avalanche principle. When you lose the ability to say no, you have an addiction. Is it your fault that you have an addiction? Yes. Is it sinful if you have an addiction? Yes. If you understand that and repent of that and try your best to get over the addiction, does that mean you won't struggle with the addiction? No. If you were in the last session, it's in your midbrain. Your addiction becomes a primal need. Everybody has a ritual. Doesn't matter what you're addicted to, you have a ritual. You have a second to decide what you're going to do. That's not long. You have a second. You know what I tell the guys who are sexually addicted that I deal with? Somebody walks into church. Somebody walks into the store. Somebody walks in, they got short shorts on, or they got these modern, as tight as you can get, leotard things that show every crease and crick and cranny. And if that's sexy, you have 1 second to look away. 1 second. If you go into Chili's, I don't know how it is in Springfield, but in Searcy we have a Chili's. We're in a dry county, so there's no bar. But if you're addicted to alcohol and your Chili's has a bar in it, don't go there. Hello, how hard is that? They sell alcohol, don't go there. Because something may very well hitch onto your trigger. You know, some people, it's the bottle. It's the water, what comes down the side? It's cold. What? Help me, Renee. The condensation, one of those words I never learned in college. The condensation rolls down the side of the bottle. For some people, that's a trigger. If they see that for a second, they're all over that bottle. Some people, it's opening it up and smelling it. They can get by until they smell it. If they smell it, they have a second to get out of there. Or they are drunk for 3 weeks. Everybody has a trigger. And we need to have enough sense to know we've got 1 second to get over it. Now here's what you want to know. Here's steps for sex addicts. There's such a thing as first order change and second order change. First order change is, I've got down here logistics. Sounds like I work for UPS, doesn't it? Logistics. Logistics are those things that are obvious and easy. For example, K.T. Oslin, who's, if you're over 60, you may know who that is, was one of my favorite singers. She had a song out that said, I need to find a new way home. And it's about her boyfriend for years that she dated, and he dumped her for another woman. And every time she drove home after work, the guy's truck was there with a new woman. And she said in the song, I'm doing very well. I've gotten over it, except I need to find a new way home. That's first order change. Find a new way home. If you go to peep shows, which they may not have anymore, you go to stores that sell pornographic DVDs, you go to movie houses that show it, you got to stop it! You really do. But that's first order change. You go another way. If you pay cash for pornography, don't carry cash anymore. That's first order change. You don't go to the bar for hamburgers and fries if they have a bar, if you're alcoholic. The thing about rehab is you can't get it at rehab if it's a decent rehab. So for some people, first order change is going to rehab. For some people, that's second order change. Second order change is internal, emotional, relational. You set a higher standard. Second order change is admitting you have a problem, finding out what you can do about it and working on that. It's much more than superficial. second order change. Now I'm going to give you specifics. First steps for sex addicts. Number one, I'm going to show a video in just a second. Talk to somebody about your problem. According to the 12-step program, we're as sick as our secrets. Tell someone about your struggles and ask for help. It's not just enough to confess your sin to God. Simply being honest with someone helps relieve the shame and starts a healing process. The thing I get more than anybody else is, well, I want to be healed, but I'm not going to tell anybody. And I go back, you remember when I asked you if you wanted to get well, what did you say? Yes, I'll do whatever it takes. You got to tell somebody. You don't get over an addiction in secrecy. James 5:16, confess your sins one to another and pray for each other so you may be healed. The prayer of a righteous person is powerful and effective. Well, who would have thought the Holy Spirit had a good idea? Confess your faults. That's what I'm talking about. You got to tell. Would you show that video? This is 5 minutes. I'm going to sit down.
Satan works through shame. You know, he's referred to as the accuser. And he whispers in our ear something kind of like, you know, you better not share because you really are the only one and no one else will understand. So let's just make this our little secret.
He wins when we keep it a secret. As long as I keep it a secret, he wins. As soon as I tell, and it's that old thing, confession. You know, God wants us to confess our sins one to another. And when we don't do that, Satan keeps his grip on us. He's got a hold of us as long as we do that.
Because if you're at the point of surrender with God and say, I need help, you still have your own area of accountability to then go forward and say, if you truly are surrendered to this process of recovery, then you have to then now go confess it to somebody then, because this is not meant to be done by yourself.
You don't recover in a vacuum. The core of an addiction is deception and dishonesty. And so the opposite is true in recovery, that I get into honesty and in fairness and integrity, that I begin to let my life be a life of integrity, even if that integrity is being able to admit to another person, you know, I told you I didn't ever want to do this again. I found myself right back in there today, and I don't want to be there. The integrity is that I got what we call getting current. I let somebody else in. I don't keep it as a secret, because secrets keep us sick. So the very first thing is that I've got to get honest. I've got to get into a group that understands where I am, and I've got to be able to receive from them the gift of acceptance about what's happened.
Well, you have to look at it as your past is your past, and you can't change what's happened to you, but you can decide to change your future. I mean, you can say, today's the day I'm going to get help and not let the past of my life rule the rest of my life. Because that was something that I was doing for a long time, was saying, well, this is the hand I was dealt. I don't know anything different than this. I was 10 years old when I saw porn. This is from my own conscious state. This is all I've really known. Because you can't remember a lot from your childhood. So for me, it was like my childhood began at 10, and that was it. Like, all I knew was pornography. All I knew was destructive behavior. And so for me, that was going to be my whole life. I had no reason to think it was going to change. And so for me, it was like, how can I get past my past? You know, how can I say, okay, I'm no longer going to blame my dad for not being around, no longer going to blame my brother for leaving the magazine there, because at the end of the day, I'm still choosing to let the addiction escalate. I'm choosing to go beyond my first exposure, and I have to come to terms with what today can I take ownership of. And it's important that we not just blame our surroundings, not blame our childhood, but act as if we are accountable to ourselves today as mature people to say, enough is enough and I need help.
Yeah, addicts are in denial. They rationalize, they blame, they excuse. They're narcissistic. They worship themselves. And to get them to see, you know what, do you see that here, these choices were made against you, not your fault, but you began to make choices here. Well, yeah, and most of them can get that. And then they have to understand that they'll continue to make the wrong choices until, for some of them, they hit bottom. They lose. We talk about the losses of an addict. You know, they'll lose their wife. They'll lose a job. Some of these guys will say, do you know that if you act out with porn at your job site, working for a big bank or working for a big company, they track that in the IT department. The chances are really high. And some guy that you're going to get caught. And some guys are like, I know that, but I did it anyhow. That's that addiction piece, that pathological relationship with a mood-altering substance that says, I just can't stop. But they can begin to realize, I am making choices here. But staying on the choice level, the volitional level, it's just a choice. That doesn't work either. To say, you're just choosing it. Stop that sin. It's not that easy.
When an addict is in denial, making excuses, justifications, these are basically an attempt to say, you know, I'm still in control. So if somebody really is in control, then appealing to them logically, emotionally, spiritually to stop the hurtful behavior would work. You know, the first step in the 12 steps is admitting powerlessness. Basically saying, my life is out of my control and I need help. I can't do it alone. So to admit this in a culture, a family, or a church family where everybody portrays themselves as having everything under control, that's a very difficult task and can, on the outset, reinforce some of the negative beliefs they have about themselves that they are not good enough or just innately bad, bringing about more feelings of shame.
The main thing is we've got to get away from the shame. We've got to get people to say to each other, you know, I don't have it all put together. You know, I've walked with the Lord this long, but I still battle this. We've got to get people to understand that it is the sufficiency of Jesus Christ by which we walk. And we live in a society that says, live by your sufficiency. And then if that doesn't work, pull out Christ as a MasterCard, run them through for what you can't pay for on your own, and then do it yourself. We have to surrender self-sufficiency and truly begin to believe in the sufficiency of Jesus.
Have a doctor in Little Rock whose two little girls walked in on her dad acting out in front of a computer screen. And she called me and she said, what do I need to do? I told her. She said, I'm never going to do that. I said, why not? She said, you're asking me to tell my dad he has to go to somebody and admit he has a problem. He will never do that. And I said, here's what you're telling me. You got two little girls that are forever warped with this vision in their mind, and the man who caused that problem, you're not even willing to tell, you better go get help. She said, I'm not. And she didn't. I have no idea what's going on. She did end up, she called me about a year later. She said, I finally approached my dad, and he said, if I forced him to tell, he was going to divorce mom, take half the stuff, and move to the West Coast and never see us all again. I said, call his bluff. He'll never do it. She wouldn't call his bluff. She didn't get help for the two little girls, which is child abuse. And I don't know what's going on with them. Got to get over our pride. We got to get over the fact that we are not in control. If we're addicted to whatever, we're not in control. We are powerless. We're just not used to saying that. Number one is you got to tell somebody. That doesn't mean just one person. You tell somebody, we'll talk about more. You have to learn more about the problem and the solution. What you do is you read. Find out more about the problem. I may be a sex addict. What does that mean? Here are some books. If you're interested, I can get those to you or get the names to you. Then you have to set behavioral boundaries. Make any changes you can think of to curb your acting out behaviors. It's humorous, but you start with stop it. If you're watching porn, quit. I'm dealing with a man right now who is 50-some years old. He downloads pornography on his iPhone. I said, we have to deal with first order change. And he said, what does that mean? I says, that means you got to get rid of your iPhone. I'm not doing that. How am I going to text? Get a cheapy old flip phone that you find at a pawn shop and don't have a smartphone that connects you to the internet. All you want to do is talk on the phone and text. That's more than they could do. When I was growing up, you could talk. It was a phone. It wasn't a computer. It wasn't a watch. It was a phone. He said, I can't do that. I said, then you don't really want to get well, do you?
Yeah, I want to get well, but I'm keeping my cell phone.
It's not going to happen. Put your computer in a public place. Eliminate contact with an affair partner. Don't carry cash. Change your cell phone number. If you got women or men calling you, change your cell phone number. Change the way you go home from work. Don't give up if you can't do these things without help from your recovery group and or accountability partner, which implies you're going to group and you have an accountability partner, which is number four. Attend a 12-step or support group. You don't get well in a vacuum. You have to attend a 12-step group or support group. I heard this morning that y'all have an addiction recovery group. I really don't like you to call it an addiction group. It's not really an addiction group. It sounds like if you want an addiction, come, we'll teach you how. Just being a little humorous. It needs to be a recovery group. You come here and we'll help you. Being part of a community is the key, not just any community. Very important. Several people in your support system need to be successfully abstaining from inappropriate sexual activity. My son-in-law went to Celebrate Recovery. I'm not necessarily down on Celebrate Recovery. He went for sexual addiction. Nobody else there had it. Nobody else was talking about it. So he'd go with the gamblers. They'd get in their little gambling group. He didn't gamble. He didn't have a problem with gambling. Did he get any help? Not one. He needed to get in a group where there were several other sexual addicts who were working on it and trying to be clean and sober so they could understand each other. There's all kinds of 12-step groups around. Sexaholics Anonymous, Sex Addicts Anonymous. There are faith-based groups, life groups, Celebrate Recovery. I have two question marks by that. My experience with Celebrate Recovery is almost always they do not have a sexual addiction component. If they do and it's done right, I'm all for that. Join with other churches. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. I don't care if they're the Baptists or the Presbyterians or the Catholics or the Mormons. If they have a recovery group that you can benefit from, you don't have to convert to Joseph Smith. You just need to go to a group where people understand your problem. And if there's no group around here, which I seriously doubt, start your own group. Start a church for sexual addicts here. It may be a component already. If it's not, add it as a component. And get somebody in here, even if you have to pay them, to help them through that. Then you have to attend regularly. Alcoholics Anonymous says 90 meetings in 90 days.
Well, I can't go to a meeting every day for 3 months.
Do you want to get well? Or do you want to stay in your addiction? 90 meetings in 90 days. At least, when you get over that, 3 meetings a week. 3 meetings a week. An addiction is not something you can deal with once a month or once a week at 7:30 with all the other people in there who are having problems, none of which that affect you. What you're really looking for is authentic personal relationships. You want to get an accountability partner who understands you, who loves you, and who will help you. Number five. You have to go into a period of sexual sobriety. And I understand my audience tonight, so I'm careful with this. But immediately you go into 90 days of celibacy. Immediately. With your spouse or with yourself. Sometimes it takes longer, but it takes at least 90 days for your brain to begin to recalculate back to 100% dopamine rush. If you were in last session, you understand that. It takes at least 90 days to start recalibrating your brain. It's like a guy told me one time when, forgot the name of the donut shop. What's the one we like to that we never go to because they make us fat? What? Dunkin' Donuts. Ooh, good stuff. He said, when I first went to Dunkin' Donuts, I ate one. And it was good. He said, now I have to eat five to feel that good. I get that, don't you? I ate the first piece of pizza. I thought, that's the best thing I ever ate. Now I have to eat 14 pizzas to get to the same high. We understand that. It takes going without pizza for 90 days before your brain starts to recalculate back to, boy, this one piece of pizza is good. Some people, I say here, some therapists say it takes a year. Depends on the severity of the addiction. People say, I can't go that long without having a sexual relationship. People have done it for hundreds of years. Number six, find a counselor who understands sex addiction. In my way of thinking, is you want to get a CSAT, Certified Sexual Addiction Therapist, or someone like my daughter who has dealt with it for almost 27 years and understands it inside and out. You can't go to a gambling therapist who only understands gambling addiction and think he's going to help you with a sexual addiction. It's not going to happen. Well, I'm going to a therapist. I'm going to my preacher. I've been a preacher for 50 years. The thing I know is what I don't know. Somebody comes to me. A couple years ago, a girl, one of my students, came to me. And she's sitting there in front of me. She says, I have this horrible addiction. I said, okay. I thought it was going to be bulimia, but from the size of her, that wasn't her problem. Not trying to be ugly. And she says, I'm a cutter. I said, pardon me, you're a what? I'm a cutter. Well, in Arkansas, you ride cut horses, right? Thought she was going to the rodeo. I said, I don't understand what a cutter is. She rolled up her sleeve, and she had at least 40 gash marks on her arm that she cut with a razor blade. That's a cutter. And they feel so badly about themselves, they cut themselves. And usually they do it in the shower, and as they watch the blood go down the drain, that gives them some feeling of euphoria and cleansing. So this girl's sitting there, and I said, just a minute. You know what I did? I picked up my phone. I said, Renee, I'm sending this girl over to you. Well, that's okay. I've got a free time at 4 o'clock. What's her problem? She's a cutter. Oh, no. You can help cutters. I've come to know a lot of cutters. Almost always women. Almost always large women who've been put down because of their weight and put down for so many other reasons that they feel so badly about themselves that they physically cut themselves. You don't send someone who's a cutter to someone that only understands alcohol abuse. What I'm saying is you have to be specialized. Find out who's Christian, number one, and who knows the subject you're dealing with. And then go to them. Well, that may cost some money. Do you want to get well or not? What kind of car do you drive?
Well, don't mess with my car. I've got to have my car. Got to have my wheels.
What's more important, getting over your daughter being a cutter or having a brand new shiny pickup truck? Number seven, decide to postpone any major decisions. Agree with your spouse, your parents, etc., to defer important decisions like getting a divorce or running off with an affair partner until you've been sober for several months. You aren't thinking clearly. Renee got a divorce. Took her 3 full years of intense counseling before she said, I just can't do this anymore. I get it. I understand that. Well, you have a daughter that's divorced. Yeah, and you're fat. No, I'm just kidding. Trying to make fun of me doesn't help. She told you it kills her that she's divorced. It kills us she's divorced. But let me tell you, I'd rather have it kill us the way it is than me killing him. I probably know 10% of what's happened. And it's enough for me to want to go over there and wring his neck. If I knew 100%, I'd be in prison. It's not because I'm a violent guy. Have to postpone decisions. The bottom of this, I've got this very important. Don't write a book, teach a class at church until you've been sober at least 2 years. Until this week, I worked with a lady in a rehab who is very much a sexual addict. She was in prostitution, all kinds of things. She was doing very, very well. She told me the last time I saw her, I'm going to write a book. I think I can help all kinds of people. And I said, you can, but you can't until you're sober for 2 years. And then you'll understand what's going on. That night she walked away from the rehab. Had nothing to do with that comment. She thought she was fine. She thought she was cured. She thought she was better. That night, she walked away. Where is she? We don't know. You're not ready to write a book or do a video or volunteer at Celebrate Recovery or any other recovery group as a leader for at least 2 years because you're not clean and sober yet. Consider going to a workshop or an intensive. I don't want to go to a workshop. There'll be 20 people there that know I'm an addict. Okay, do you want to get well or not? My son says if you're a sexual addict and you really gonna want to get well, the local church could put a sign on the marquee and a sign on the front door that said, we're having a class for sexual addicts. We're going to help you Thursday at 6 o'clock. And if you really want to get well, you'll walk in the building with everyone else who's a sexual addict and walk to the classroom that says, all sexual addicts, come here. Said, if you're really going to get well, you'll do whatever it takes. Got too much pride. Don't want to go to intensive. Intensive's 5 days. Sometimes they cost $2,000-$3,000. How much did you pay for your car? Sell it. Go to intensive. An intensive quickly helps you get way down the road to healing. My son runs Regroup Counseling in Searcy. It's the best I know of. I'm a little prejudiced, as they say. There are other ones, Bethesda Workshop in Nashville, Capstone Intensives in Judsonia. You go to a week's intensive, it puts you a year ahead in counseling. If you go once a week to a therapist, it'll take a year of that kind of counseling to get where you would get in a week of an intensive. Go to an intensive. Well, I really can't afford it. I don't even want to hear that. I can't afford it. Sell your car. Take a mortgage out on your house. Suck it up and ask your elders if they'll help you. And my advice to elders is, I would say help people, but they have to have some skin in the game. They come up and said it's going to cost $3,000 to go, say, we'll give you $1,000. You got to come up with the other two. Well, how am I going to get that? Sell your fishing gear. Sell your bass boat. Sell whatever it takes to get help. Objections? Well, I don't really need to go. I've stopped on my own. I hear that all the time. I'm no longer addicted. I've stopped on my own. How long has it been since you acted out? 2 days. Yeah, you stopped on your own. I can't take off work. Well, you keep messing up, you're going to lose your job. It's too expensive. People will find out. I'm too ashamed. Do you really want to get well? It all comes down to, do you really want to get well? If you don't want to get well, you come up with all kinds of excuses. If you want to get well, you'll do whatever it takes. But I still say you need skin in the game. That's for the parents. That's for the church elders. That's for anybody who is willing to help. And I, my wife and I, have helped a lot of people. But we don't help them 100%. First of all, we're not able. And secondly, they got to have some skin in the game. If they're not willing to sell their third motorcycle to go to rehab, then I'm not willing to give them money. Progression of care. Admit you're an addict. Go to a therapist who will put you in a group who will determine whether that is sufficient to help you out of your addiction, or if not, he'll say, you need to go to an intensive. And then sometimes, if it's really bad, you need to go inpatient. The conduit of hope and healing, I'm about done. Self-work, self-care, spiritual connection. The church is vital. They need authentic relationships. I had several people come to me today and say, I'm struggling with this and I'm struggling with that. I didn't feel a bit of anger, shame. I said, thanks for telling me. Are you getting help? Yes, no. I'll help you with help. But we got to get to the place where people can come down and tell a stranger, I'm having a struggle. And knowing they're going to say, I will help you. Recovery is caught, not taught. You can only catch it from someone who has it. You can't get over sexual addiction from a druggie. You can tell who they are. It's highly contagious. A couple more slides. You can start today. How do you start? I mean, immediately, what do you do today? You start with a healthy brain. What does that mean? You have to get sleep. You have to have physical time, focus time, time in, downtime, play time. Let me explain that quickly. Start today and every day. You have to meditate. Well, I never meditated in my life. Well, you're going to start today. What am I going to meditate about? Anything you want to. I would prefer them to give them a scripture or something they could think about. But you do that every day, 2 minutes to 30 minutes. You have a journal. And in your journal, you write down one positive event that happened that day. Just one. It shouldn't be too hard. Record three things for which you are grateful for today. Do it every day, and they have to be different. That is difficult. Talked to a girl the other day. I've been seeing her for about 6 weeks. She said, I ran out of things I'm grateful for. And I said, I really don't think so. And she said, what do you mean? I said, how long have you been in here? She said, 3 months. I said, are you grateful for that? She said, absolutely. I said, have you written that down? No. One of your friends was baptized today. You're grateful for that? Yeah. Did you write that down? No. Think of three things every day for which you're grateful. Then the next thing is encourage someone else. Someone's having a struggle and you say, I have the same problem and I'm dealing with it. Let me walk with you. Let me help you. Encourage them. And then exercise. When you exercise, it says, I'm important, I'm valuable. I'm worth something to me. So every day you do these things. For churches, my recommendation is first have an introductory weekend. Hello, that's what we've done. Second thing I would recommend for those who are really interested in helping is go through the Mousetrap series. It's in the office. The only thing you might do is to need to get some more workbooks. I left two here. But you work through it and you work through it for yourself. Very difficult. You think you're fine. You think you're healthy. You have a workbook that nobody sees but you. But you watch the DVD as a group. You fill out your workbook later and you analyze yourself. One of the hardest things I did when I was being certified as a pastoral sexual addiction professional, that's the way they call it, was I had to analyze myself. had to tell people what I've done. I had to tell people about my struggles in my life. I had to tell people. But more than that, I had to look at myself. And that's what this series does. If you're addicted, it'll help you. If you're a therapist, it'll help you. As someone who's neither, it will help you. I would recommend you do that. If you do that in non-mixed groups. You watch the DVD in a mixed group, I'll tell you what's going to happen. Your wife's going to say, "Charlie, I told you about that." "Oh, you shut up. You don't know what you're talking about." And the husband and wife get into it about what's on the screen. Well, don't do that. Don't do it together. Well, that's hard to do. The third thing is have a first responder training. So a workshop that teaches leaders, elders, those who want to be on the front lines with this, how to respond, what to do, when they're over their head, how not to get over their head. It's a 15-hour lecture, 15-hour seminar. It's not really a lecture. It's very hands-on. My son and his partner do these. They can come to Springfield or you can come to Searcy. It's cheaper per head if you come to Searcy. But I guess the question is, and I don't make a dime off this, the question is, do you really want your church to get well? If you do, you'll teach people how to respond. And then step four is continue to seek advice and help. I have an email address. I have a telephone. People call me all the time. And more likely than not, what I say is, "Just a minute. Renee," or "Butter." We call our son Butter. He played football. There were three Ryans on the team, so they called him Smith and, I forget the other name, Fowler, and Butterfield was too long, so they just cut it down to Butter. They wanted to cut it down more, and I said no. So all his life, he's been called Butter. He said the other day, "You know how hard it's been to go through life as a dairy product." I'm getting tired. My brain's leaving me. "See, you know how hard it is to go to life being called a dairy product?" But I still call him Butter now. I call him, "Hey, Butter, what would you do?" So, seek advice. Call me. I don't charge. It's not about money. It's about helping and healing. What I would ask you to do is, if you're on Facebook, like us. Go to WeFightPorn.com and like us. We put stuff up every week that will help you. In fact, we put it up, I guess not every single day, but I've hired a guy just to do this because I don't think I have time. But like us on Facebook, WeFightPorn.com. Above all, remember, we have redemption through His blood, even the forgiveness of sins. The elders have my address and phone number. If you need me, I am always there for you. Unless you call me after 10 and then my cell phone shut off. So leave me a message. I'll get back to you the next day. You've been a great audience. It's a great church. I appreciate you being here. I've been asked to lead a closing prayer, and that will conclude. Then we're going to deal with, we're going to have a session with the teens. Question and answer. Renee and I don't know if Sandy and Ruby are coming. She's a surgical nurse. She probably needs to come home and operate on somebody. But anyway, we're really looking forward to that. I might warn the parents, if they ask a question, we answer it. Okay? We're not gross. We're not tacky. But we're going to answer the questions. When they come home and you ask them what they talked about, and they tell you, don't get upset, because they're asking questions they're not going to ask you. So maybe through this whole weekend, we'll learn to communicate a little bit better. I love kids. I love y'all being up here at the front the whole time. Y'all are great. I want to see you go to heaven. I want to help you. Y'all bow with me. God, we want to thank you for the day, for the weekend, for the leadership at this church who had enough wisdom to say, let's do this and let's make an impact on the lives of people where they are really hurting. And Father, we ask for your blessing, your favor, your mercy, your grace as this church works through some of these issues. And we would ask you, Father, to be with us who've been here, be with Renee and my family as continual struggles arise. But most of all, God, we're looking forward to that very, very special time when we can spend eternity with you. It's to that end we praise you and thank you. In Christ's name, amen. You're dismissed.